You know what? Mordak said. I'm not sure you should have put in quite so much cayenne pepper. The beige goo bubbled and heaved, giving off clouds of foul steam that stank of ammonia and boiled cabbage. The Goblin Maker General gave him the sort of look that laymen who offer advice to experts so richly deserve, and said, Is it meant to do that? Yes. They stood and watched for a long time while nothing ostensibly happened. On the surface, that is. Down there somewhere, seething away in the depths between the unspeakable thousand-year-old sediment and the fissured biscuit-hard crust of top scum, the miracle of parthenogenetic reproduction was in full swing. But with a difference. The original recipe, as handed down by the old ones and reverently transcribed on the back of an empty packet of candied teeth by Grawl the First, when the realms were young, was perhaps the most closely guarded secret of the goblin race. Sure, everybody knew the main ingredients because they saw them arriving in huge carts, slugs by the bushel, snails in towering clay jars, bale after bale of sun-dried puppy dogs' tails from the vast sprawling puppy dog ranches of the Ogin Mord. But the special blend of herbs and spices that acted as a catalyst and served to galvanize the goo into frantic, squirming life was known only to the king, the goblin maker, and, for some reason, the postmaster general. It was rumored to include turpentine, mandragora, formic acid, rose water, acetone, and bicarbonate of soda. But mostly, that was just ill-informed guesswork. A bubble, 10 feet wide and high, welled up out of the exact centre of the goo, quivered soapily for a moment in the pale red torchlight, and burst, spraying the faces of the bystanders with a fine beige mist. Mordak wiped his eyes, instinctively licked his lips, pulled a ghastly face and spat. "For crying out loud," he whimpered. "It's like treacle." The goblin maker ignored him. To create a female goblin, however, it soon became clear that they were going to have to go right back to square one and start again. No preconceptions, no fiddling around trying to save a buck by using stuff they'd already got in stock. Out went the slugs and snails. In their place came hundredweight sacks of sugar beet, barrels and crates of oregano, cumin, turmeric, caraway, fenugreek, garlic, and cayenne pepper, and dried jalapenos in special lead-lined boxes. As to the third core ingredient required by the formula painstakingly compiled by the senior technical officer of the Goblin Institute for the Advancement of Science, there was a sharp difference of opinion between the chief science officer and the goblin maker. The latter insisted on dried tails. You can't make goblins without at least 40% puppy dog's tails. He swore passionately. It wouldn't be right. That's what makes us what we are. The science officer, though sympathizing to a considerable extent with this view, pointed to the blackboards that covered his office walls, each one crammed to bursting with tiny chalked formulae. "The equations can't lie," he pointed out. "It's all things nice. Or forget the whole project." To which the goblin maker replied that if there was anything nicer in this world that a properly matured sun-dried Labrador tail with the hair still on, he'd never been told about it. Being goblins, they should have decided the issue with a duel to the death, but Mordack made them toss a coin instead. The goblin maker dipped the tip of his claw into the edge of the vat. It fizzed and dissolved. "It's time," he said. He, it should be noted, had lost the toss. Accordingly, a massive crane lifted a colossal iron bucket high into the air above the vat. A chain tightened. The bucket tilted. The goblin maker grabbed Mordack by the scruff of his neck and dragged him back out of the way of the splash as 47 tons of axes, spears, scimitars, daggers, poisoned arrows, and assorted body parts of mortal enemies burst through the crust and plunged into the deep goo. There was an explosion of effervescence, the sort you get when you add sugar to a fizzy drink, and beige suds flooded the floor. All things nice, goblin style.
"Don't blame me if it all ends in tears," the goblin maker said.
The fizzing was dying down, and something strange was happening. Mordack took a long step backwards and made the sign of the claw on his forehead.
"That can't be right, surely," he said.
The goblin maker shrugged.
"Don't ask me," he said. "I've never done this before."
The goo was changing colour, from beige to pink. The science officer, who'd been watching the proceedings from behind a large oak vat, cleared his throat.
"It's probably all that iron," he said, "reacting isothermically with the..."
"Oh, be quiet," snapped the goblin maker.
The goo had started to glow.
"I told you we should have stuck with tails, but would you listen?"
Pink vapour, thick and cloyingly aromatic, rose from the meniscus of the goo. It too was faintly luminescent, like the unearthly light of the dead marshes at night, only pink.
"I recognize that," mumbled the science officer. "It's Nuit des Morts by Maison de Luthiel."
"Sorry," he added quickly, as Mordack turned and looked at him.
"No idea how I came to know that."
The goblin maker took a long stride forward, as close to the vat as he dared get, and peered through the clouds of billowing vapour.
"You know something," he said. "I think it's working."
Mordack stared at him.
"But it's pink."
The goblin maker shrugged.
"Perhaps it's supposed to be. We just don't know, that's the thing. Maybe pink is, I don't know, natural in these circumstances."
"I wouldn't go any closer if I were you," muttered the science officer. "I don't like the look of it one bit."
A fat drop of sweat ran down Mordack's snout and landed on his projecting lower lip.
"I say we pull the plug and start again with puppy-dogged tails," he said. "Nothing good ever came of pink, trust me."
"No," the goblin maker said. "It's working. He was right, and I was wrong. This is..."
A long crack suddenly appeared in the side of the vat. Mordack lunged forward and grabbed for the goblin maker's sleeve, but too late. The vat gave way, and a pink tidal wave spurted through the fissure. The goblin maker tried to back away, slipped, lost his footing, and went down. A fraction of a second later, he was completely engulfed. Mordack tried to go in after him,
but the science officer grabbed his knees and wouldn't let go.
"Leave him," he shouted. "There's nothing we can do for him. We've got to get out of here now."
True, the flood level was rising, groping for their toes with outriders of fizzing pink foam.
"It's expanding," Mordak yelled. "Is it meant to? Who gives a damn? Come on!"
They scrambled up the steps, slammed the door behind them, and shot all six bolts. Then they caught their breath and looked at each other. For a long time, neither of them spoke. Then Mordak said,
"This never happened, right?"
"What never happened?"
"Good man."
The science officer wasn't listening. He was staring at the door, from under which a creamy pink pool was rapidly spreading out into the passageway.
"Oh, nuts," he said. "That isn't good."
Mordak thought quickly.
"The best thing," he said, "would be to evacuate this entire level, then divert the main sewer and flood it good and proper. Anything else down here, do you know?"
The science officer scowled in thought.
"State archives," he said. "Treasury Department offices? Armory? Crown jewels? Oh, and most of the gold reserves."
The goo was eating away at the foot of the door. Mordak quickly snatched his feet out of the way.
"Nothing we can't do without, then," he said. "Which way's the exit?"
The door shattered into splinters. A torrent of foaming pink goo swept them both off their feet and washed them away. Mordak grabbed the science officer by one cauliflower ear and stuck out his other arm, so that his claws scraped the wall as they were carried bodily by the current down the passageway. The science officer started squealing. Definitely conduct unbecoming a goblin under any circumstances. But the only reason why Mordak wasn't doing exactly the same thing was that his mouth was full of the loathsome sweet pink goo. The flood was shooting them inexorably towards a ventilation duct, down which the pink stuff was gurgling away into the bowels of the earth. "We can fit through that easily," Mordak calculated, "but only after our heads are snapped off like carrots. Oh well." And then his trailing claw lodged in something, which turned out to be an iron ring, fitted to a door in place of the more conventional lifter-type latch. Hooray for unconventionality.
"Your Majesty!"
He could barely hear the science officer over the roar of the pink flood.
"What?" "I think you were right. Too much cayenne pepper."
In spite of everything, Mordak smiled.
"Shut your face," he said, not unkindly, and hung on grimly, ring in one paw, ear in the other, waiting to see what happened next.